Blog Talk Radio.
Problem is too many red states, she said to me. The country is better off when governed liberally. I'd like to help all you red states become lefties. There must be 50 ways to be a liberal. She said it's really a liberal habit to intrude. Furthermore, the death penalty doesn't work and is so rude. So we'll repeal the right to tote guns cause they're so crude. There must be 50 ways to be a liberal. 50 ways to be a liberal. Just read the new tax check. Use a carry plan stand. Give condoms to a boy, Roy, and set his mind free. Put voters on the bus, Gus. You don't need another trip much. Just hug yourself a tree, Lee, and make Medicare free. Just raise a new tax, Jack. Use a carry plan stand. Give condoms to a boy, Roy, and set his mind free. Put voters on the bus, Gus. You don't need another troops much. Just hug yourself a tree, Lee, and make Medicare free. She said it grieves me so to see all those red states. I wish there was some way we could lock those southerners behind iron gates. And I said, I appreciate that. And would you please make it safe to marry gays? She said, why don't we both protest the war tonight? And I'm sure in the morning those soldiers will end the fight. And then she kissed me, and I realized she probably was right. There must be 50 ways to be a liberal. 50 ways to be a liberal. Just raise a new tax, Jack. Use a carry plan stand. Give condoms to a boy, Roy, and set his mind free. Put voters on the bus, Gus. You don't need another troop much. Just hug yourself a tree, Lee, and make Medicare free. Just raise a new tax, Jack. Use a carry plan stand. Give condoms to a boy, Roy, and set his mind free. Put voters on the bus, Gus. You don't need another troop much. Just hug yourself a tree, Lee, then make Medicare free.
All right, everybody, it's Monday night, and that means it's time for the Constitution Hour. Of course, as always, made possible by the great folks over at PatriotFamilies.com. That's PatriotFamilies with a YS.com. And I see we've only got a couple in the chat room tonight, my good brother, Mr. Michael Magic, and our blessed den mother, Miss Yola from New York. So I want to give those two a shout out. And of course, I expected that we might be a little light in the beginning because I did change things up from the norm and started the show at 6 instead of 7:30. But I was very anxious to get back in the saddle, so to speak, and kind of pick up where I left off yesterday evening, discussing Abraham Lincoln and the impact that he had on our lives today, even. And when we look at the political arena coming out of the Lincoln era, it's no wonder that we still today don't trust politicians. The Congress back in the day, when Lincoln was in office and after his assassination, when Johnson was in office, it was literally a free-for-all. I mean, these people, the money flowed like wine, and that's precisely the reason that they wanted to institute the American system. They wanted to institute the American system, the Hamiltonian system, the British mercantilism system, for precisely the reason that it drove tons of money into the pockets of politicians and elected officials. It worked fabulously. The problem with that is it drains the productivity and the morality of society. And we've seen the evidence of that to this day. I found it very interesting that President Lincoln had some otherwise nefarious admirers. And in 1864, the one and only Karl Marx wrote Mr. Abraham Lincoln a letter congratulating him. It says, and I quote, "Sir, we congratulate the American people upon your re-election by a large majority." Isn't it nice to know that even the great Karl Marx loved Abraham Lincoln? Marx had to be beside himself with joy at what was taking place in America, because it was, after all, implementing many of his own ideas, and he certainly thought, promoted the idea that all-out war and total chaos was the way to achieve that goal. So it's no wonder that he was just ecstatic that Lincoln had won an election the second time around. Of course, we know from last night's show and from history that the reason that Lincoln was able to win so easily was because he had pretty much destroyed the competition. And anyone that would raise a voice in opposition to him faced the distinct possibility of ending up in a military prison. We think the NDAA and the Patriot Act are something new. They're tame by comparison to the Lieber Code and what Lincoln instituted. And not just that Lincoln invaded the southern states, he invaded the northern states as well to make sure to quell any opposition to his policies. And I just think that's very telling, and something that I sure didn't hear when I was in school, and I don't believe I've heard on any of the Civil War series, or if I did, it didn't register, you know. And it seems that another couple of rotten characters from history were also admirers of Mr. Lincoln. One such character was a gentleman named Otto von Bismarck. And I find that this part of it interesting, as much as I do the Lincoln era. On my family, and pardon me if I drift for a moment, I'm going to give you a little bit of my genealogy. On my father's mother's side are the Clays. My great-grandfather was Henry Clay. I haven't done the research, but I would suspect that he traces back to the Henry Clay that was Lincoln's hero. On my wife's side, her family has traced their roots back to Kaiser Wilhelm, Kaiser Wilhelm's first wife. And that's unique because the individual that I'm going to talk about right now is Otto von Bismarck. Otto von Bismarck was the first chancellor of the German Empire, or the German Confederation under the Kaiser Wilhelm II. And that was in the 1870s up into the 1890s. 1890 is when Otto von Bismarck died. But there can be little debate or dispute that von Bismarck was inspired in part by Lincoln's actions, and it seemed to me to be a prevailing ideology of the time. Of course, there was a competing ideology that came from the Jeffersonians, but Bismarck, like Hamilton, like Clinton, like Clay, believed in a very powerful central state, and all the money flowing into the central government and then being dispersed out to the states as they were. And, you know, if you ever hear someone use the term trickle-down economics, you know, I don't think it gets any more trickle-down than that, where the population of the country or nation, they do all the labor, they earn the money, then send the money back to the government so that the government can disperse it back to their localities, back to their local areas, and the local politicians can gain favor by doling out these favors within their community to their constituents. It's a lot like the taxpayers bailing out the banks. It's a ridiculous circle. We should learn from our history. We should know better. What we ought to do is hang on to our own damn money, our own earnings, and not send it to the government and not put it in any of their banks. And this is why it was so instrumental for the government to have a national banking system. But anyway, I digress. Mr. Bismarck, they say, was a conservative German statesman. As minister president of Prussia from 1862 to 1890, Bismarck provoked wars that made Prussia dominant over Austria and France and lined up the smaller German states behind Prussia. In 1867, he also became chancellor of the North German Confederation. Bismarck designed and created the German Empire in 1871, becoming its first chancellor and largely controlling its affairs until he was removed by Kaiser Wilhelm II in 1890. His diplomacy of Realpolitik and powerful rule gained him the nickname the Iron Chancellor. Henry Kissinger very much seems to be in admiration of Mr. von Bismarck. The article goes on, he used the balance of power, diplomacy, to keep Europe peaceful in the 1870s and 1880s. He created a new nation and led the way to the welfare state. He disliked colonialism, but reluctantly built an overseas empire when it was demanded by both elite and mass opinion. Isn't that interesting? He created the welfare state over in Germany, much as Lincoln created the welfare state right here in the United States of America. Don't believe it? Go read the Reconstruction Acts of Congress. Even after Lincoln was assassinated, we still devolved into a welfare state. And it was that welfare state that continues to this day. And it's directly tied to the presidency of Abraham Lincoln. Alexander Hamilton and his devout supporters, known as the Hamiltonians, who later became the Whig Party, who later became the Democratic Republicans, and now today are known as Republicans. It also seems that another nefarious character in history was admiring our Mr. Lincoln. A beast named Adolf Hitler. Hitler actually talked about the Union in his book, Mein Kampf. And he wrote, "The individual states of the American Union could not have possessed any state sovereignty of their own, for it was not these states that formed the Union. On the contrary, it was the Union which formed a great part of the so-called states." Well, we know that's not correct. The states created the federal government. The Union was the states. I mean, how can you have a union without states? It's kind of counterintuitive. The Union, he wrote, is much older than the Constitution. It was formed, in fact, by the Articles of Association in 1774. Oh, I'm sorry, this is Lincoln's words at his first inaugural address. "The Union is much older than the Constitution. It was formed, in fact, by the Articles of Association in 1774. It was matured and continued by the Declaration of Independence in 76. It was further matured by the Articles of Confederation in 78. And finally, in 87, one of the declared objects for ordaining or establishing the Constitution was to form a more perfect union." So Lincoln believed that the union existed before the states, that there was a union that was created prior to the creation of the states. And when Lincoln talks about saving the union, that's the union he's talking about, guys. He's not talking about the Constitution, and his actions bear that out. He didn't want to save the Constitution as it was. He wanted to save the Union, the collection of states. I would say because they posed the possibility for tremendous power and wealth, and for no other reason other than to advance his own agenda, which wasn't just his own, it belonged to many, the Hamiltonians, the Whig Party. In Mein Kampf, Hitler praised Otto von Bismarck for proving the greatness of his statesmanship by gradually diminishing the sovereignty of the German state and centralizing governmental power in Germany. "This was a welcome development," wrote Hitler, "since the power of the German central state was threatened by the struggle between federalism and centralization so shrewdly propagated by the Jews in 1919, 20, and 21, and afterward." So here we see Hitler talking about the Jews were propagating federalism. I find that incredible. Perhaps they were. I don't know. But I do know one thing. That here we see across the globe in Germany another country whereby federalism is being promoted even while our very own is being destroyed. Federalism, I guess, is probably not the correct term, but it's as close as we can get. The other side of that coin is nationalism. And I know you've heard me on this show state many times that nationalism is a very dangerous thing. Nationalism is exactly what Lincoln wanted to promote, as well as his followers. They wanted to promote the idea of nation, country, not your individual country like Virginia or Illinois. No. A national state, a government that is all-powerful and all-encompassing. That was the program. And I would say they've succeeded. It's just amazing to me that this take on history is not something that most of us are familiar with. And still to this day, we hear the baloney about slavery being the issue during the Civil War. And even today, we see the black community being utilized in much the same manner that they were during Lincoln's administration. They're used as nothing more than political pawns. And we have to question why individuals like Jackson and Sharpton rise to the occasion. But you don't have to question too long, because they all have benefited monetarily from their activism. The one that they couldn't capitulate, they killed in Martin Luther King. And that's a shame. Affinity for Dr. Martin Luther King. And he couldn't just come out and tell people straight out. And isn't it ironic that we had we had Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, for God's sakes. Lincoln was a white supremacist by every measure of the term. He agreed with the white citizens' councils when he made up such statements as, and this is a quote from Lincoln, "I have no purpose to introduce political and social equality between the black and white races." And, quote, "I am in favor of the race to which I belong, having the superior position." So there's really no question that, number one, Lincoln had no intention of freeing the slaves. The last thing that he or his cronies wanted was a bunch of free black men and women migrating to the North. He tolerated the abolitionists because they helped further his agenda. How they became so confused that Lincoln wanted to free the slaves is beyond me, because he certainly didn't make it any secret. He wrote Horace Greeley in 1863. Horace Greeley was the editor of a major New York newspaper, one of the few that was remaining, and he knew that Greeley would print whatever Lincoln wanted him to, and he wrote Greeley and he told him that if I could preserve the Union, and remember what Union we're talking about here, without freeing a single slave, I would do it. Slavery wasn't his object. His object was absolute power. His object was advancing the agenda of the Hamiltonians, the Whigs, the American system. His object was introducing into a republic fascism. They didn't call it that then. I don't even know if the term existed at that time. And all of these events taking place, you know, in the 1860s and moving into the 1870s, we like to sit back and believe that we're, you know, things are compartmentalized. You have all of these different things that have gone on in history, and they're history, you know? They're not, one doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the other. You've got the Civil War, the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, the War of 1812, the Mexican-American War, the Spanish-American War, World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam. None of these things have anything to do with each other. Or at least that's the way it appears by the way our history is written. But I think if we do a little research and we really dig into it and we actually can find the true characters, things become a little different. We start seeing a different picture. And certainly the picture that I am seeing is that during the Lincoln administration, there was the Bismarck administration over in Prussia and Germany. And they were both advancing an ideology that wasn't new. Socialism. Fascism. We can speculate on the various motivations behind it. But I think if we just look to the most basis, fundamental human nature desires, you know, the lust of the flesh, it was greed. Greed and power. That's really what it comes down to. So in Germany, you've got Bismarck consolidating the German states and creating a welfare state within Germany and Austria and France. And you've got Lincoln demolishing the boundaries between the states, stripping away from them any right of sovereignty, for them to be their own individual sovereign nations. You have this one term. Meanwhile, in Germany, and I'm not sure how this all plays out because Marx loved the idea, but Marx was run out of many of the universities in Germany prior to Bismarck getting there in the 1840s, is when Marx was run out of most of the German universities. But what we see is this collectivism, this socialism, this collective ideology, Marxist ideology. Marx didn't want to necessarily change socialism or communism. He wanted to perfect it. And these ideas flow back, well back into history, into ancient Greece. And Plato's Republic. If you read Plato's Republic, it won't take you very long in reading that you'll see all the similarities. You'll see where the ideas come from. And they go back even further than that. But I don't want to digress too far. So we have in the 1860s a civil war, which we shouldn't even call it a war because it was never declared by our Congress and Assembly. So we had a police action in the United States that many call the Civil War. We had von Bismarck traipsing all around Germany and Europe, unifying them into a welfare state. We had immediately at the end of the Civil War, Grant was clamoring for permission to invade Mexico, while Sherman was sent out into the plains to annihilate the Plains Indians so that they could advance the railroads that were being subsidized by Lincoln's administration. Everything was working swimmingly until we came to 1873. And 1873, we had some fallout and there were problems throughout the nation. And the reason we're having all these problems was, oh my God, a real estate bubble. Can you believe it? Property values had soared once Lincoln had gotten into office, and you had all this new property. The property values just exploded. And you can imagine what happened, much like what happened in our most recent real estate bubble. The shysters came out of the woodwork. The money flowed like wine. But unfortunately, the money, much of it, wasn't gold and silver. It was greenbacks from our new national bank. And this just worked to inflate the bubble. And we were still loosely on a gold standard at that time. And along comes a guy named William Jennings Bryant and the Free Silver Movement. And there was a book written, something about the Wizard of Oz. And so we had turmoil right here in our own country still, even after the war. And it demolished much of the economy in the North and the South. In the whole of the United States, the economy was devastated because of the war. And some real millionaires and billionaires were created from the blood money that flowed from the South. Meanwhile, Germany, France, Austria, they were beginning to have their own problems as well. Their hopeful utopia was beginning to crumble. And then you had this guy come along in Italy, Mussolini. And we had the beginning of World War I. Meanwhile, here in the States, you know, we've traversed up to about 1894. You had another bank panic, and the banking system still was really shaky because in spite of the national banking system and the nationally chartered banks, and in spite of the tax that the Lincoln administration and Johnson and those to follow had placed on state bank notes over national bank notes, in spite of that tax, and in part because of the inflation through the greenbacks, we had another upset. That upset finally came to a culmination, came to a head in about 1903, 1904, the panic of 1903. That's when one of the big financiers, J.P. Morgan, steps onto the scene. And Morgan offers enough gold to bail the government out. Now, you know that came with strings attached. And then Morgan and his compatriots set off to a place called Jekyll Island. And they construe a new banking system to fix the shortcomings of the national banking system that Lincoln had instituted under the Democratic Republicans in his administration. And that, boys and girls, is how we ended up with a president named Woodrow Wilson at the helm, because Wilson had already agreed he would sign the bill into legislation if it came to his desk. Meanwhile, we're on the verge of a war, a world war. And we've already learned from yesterday that if there's one thing that the American system loves more than anything, it's a war. Because, my God, war is just the best opportunity in the world for massive profits. And once you've got a marriage of the government and corporations, well, you've got a ready-made war machine anytime you want it. And the money will flow like wine. Who cares if you're killing the very people that you're stealing the money from to begin with? That's not their concern. The world is our oyster, and it's ripe for shucking. And in every shell, we'll find a pearl. And see, the American people weren't real keen on the idea of getting involved in World War I, having just barely started to recover from the war between the states, or the war that never was, the police action, the Civil War, the War of Rebellion. They'd had enough of war and fighting. It killed 625,000 Americans, were murdered in the Civil War that ended in 1865. And I promise you, in 1907, they were in no damned hurry to send what remained of their children off to fight in some foreign land. So here comes Mr. Wilson, and Wilson had opposition with Taft. And the way they overcame that opposition is they called up good old Uncle Teddy, one of the Rough Riders, by God, from the Mexican-American Wars. And by God, Uncle Teddy, he got in there and he ran under the Bull Moose Party, a third party, and he split the vote. Wilson won the election. And not long after that, we sent a hospital ship to aid our allies in England. Trouble was, this hospital ship was filled with ammunition and military supplies, and the Germans knew it. And the administration knew it. The Germans even went as far as taking out ads in New York newspapers begging the people not to send that ship. Because if they were to send that ship into an active war zone, the Germans would have no choice but to sink it. Because they knew that our administration was trying to supply their enemy, and they couldn't have that. I mean, look at what we yak at today on the news. Oh, they're giving aid and comfort to the enemy, the terrorist, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, Iran. Oh, my God, really? We were engaged in the same thing. And then when the Lusitania was destroyed and sank, well, the people were outraged. Because after all, it was a hospital ship. It was a humanitarian mission. Nobody. They saw it's a conspiracy theory that there was munitions and military supplies on board that ship. That's ridiculous. Of course, now we know the guy that discovered the Titanic has also found the Lusitania. And what do you know? The hull, the cargo hold, is full of ammunition. And what happened at the end of World War One, does anybody know how that ended and what the result was? At the end of World War One, you had a compact of nations. Now we're going from centralizing power in one continent to centralizing global power into the League of Nations. And they put horrendous demands on Germany at the end of World War One. They gutted Germany. And the result of that was a very disgruntled young man who rose to become chancellor named Adolf Hitler. And he was going to show the world that he could get rid of these Jews who were still clamoring for federalism and independence. And he was going to create his own bank and his own economy and his own war machine, because these other fools were just idiots. They weren't of the pure race. It all fits together, people. Mr. Michael. Oh, no, that is Mr. Robert. How are you, young man?
That was quite a speech. He hit the nail right on the head.
Why don't we know this history as Americans?
Because
we got government education.
Well, let me. I wanted to reiterate it what you went over last night, though, Ron, which was a great review, because I tell you why. And the reason why is my junior college American history professor was saying all this stuff way back when, and I thought he was crazy. I thought he was nuts. But he was trying to enlighten our class what was going on, and no one didn't want to hear him.
You actually had a professor that was not a liberal. Wow.
Yeah, wow.
That's a rare bird.
His name was Robert Tisdale, and he happened to like me. And
well, it's just because you're named Robert.
Yeah, well, that's true too. But at any rate, he was telling us, and between him and I, he told me he was a John Bircher. I said to him back in 1974, when I graduated, I said to him, "Wow, you sound just like a John Bircher." And he goes, "How did you know that?" I said, "Because you sound like my milkman." I said, "That's what my milkman was repeating your words, and my mother was going wild listening to my milkman saying, you know, my mother used to say, you're a fool. You're a damn fool for saying what you're saying. You don't know what you're talking about." Little did she know, I mean, my mother was General George Patton's right-hand nurse, surgical nurse, during the Battle of Bulge of World War II. And she was going wild on the milkman.
That's funny. I mean, it's funny to think about it now, you know, and look back on it. And, you know, I get a better understanding having known you a little more now and hearing some of these things. I get a better understanding of why Mr. Robert is a conservative. And I don't know what happened to your call. I didn't kick you out, so your cell phone must have dropped you, Robert. So I don't know what happened there, but we lost Robert, unfortunately. But I'm sure he'll call back in. We'll get him back on the line. In the meantime, I wonder what happened to some of our other compatriots out there. And I see Papa Bear has just popped in. Yeah, you know, it may be Blog Talk, or it may well be that it's Robert's cell phone. And there he is. He's back with us.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, your dog ate your phone?
No. But at any rate, she was going wild on the milkman, right?
Right.
So, you know, the moral of the story was around the neighborhood when the milkman spent hours on end trying to drum it into my mother's head what was going on. It's just the same way you're drumming it in, right?
Yeah.
So the moral of the story after he was been like 2 hours at my mother's house in his milk truck, you know, delivering the milk.
Ah.
So the end, and I was at the house, but the end result of the story was that everybody in the neighborhood thought that the milkman and my mother were having an affair.
Well, of course, that's the logical conclusion, you know.
But I swear to you, Ron. I mean, his name is Tom Edmondson. And you know, after my mother passed away, that he was the only man in the city of Venice who gave me a call and said how sorry he was to hear about my mother.
Well, maybe there was something going on there, Robert. You never
know. I said, "Baby Tom, I'm your son. Is that true?"
No, I have to say, you couldn't deny your father, and he couldn't deny you if you wanted to.
That's why my father always called me the illegitimate son of Richard Nixon. It was my history teacher, and Tom Edmondson, basically were have been saying this to me for years, and we as Americans could not believe that the government would do such a thing to us.
Well, you know, and if you think about it, and you look at it now, and it's I think perhaps perfectly appropriate that the Republican Party is called the Party of Lincoln.
Right.
Because they're more true constitutionalists and conservatives than Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid and the rest of them.
Well, that's the whole point of the matter. We don't know who to believe now. Now we just don't know who to believe.
Well, we know who not to believe.
But yeah, we know who not to believe.
Anyone proselytizing on saving the system as it is, the current system, anyone that is advocating, you know, changing the tax code, reshuffling the code around to redirect the tax money, what's horse crap?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. And I've talked about that since I started on the show, that, you know, all of these politicians, if you actually stop and listen to their empty and hollow promises, everything that they're advocating is a way to prop up the system that's been in place since Lincoln.
Right.
They're not talking about reverting back to constitutional government that existed before Lincoln. They're
right.
talking about propping up the current system of fascism in the United States of America. And then you get someone like Ron Paul comes out and is talking about the Constitution, and everybody thinks he's a nut. And he's not a nut. And the problem is that the party, Lincoln's party, the Hamiltonians, they've become divided. You know, I think it's ironic that it was called the Democratic Republicans. They've become divided, but only slightly. And it seems they take turns being the party, the war party.
Like Governor Perry.
Perry's an idiot. You know, he had, I don't mean that in the sense that he's not educated, but I mean that in the sense that he had it right when he talked about Social Security being a Ponzi scheme. And when he had the opportunity to stand on principle, he backpedaled.
Right.
He stood up on that stage and waffled and backpedaled. And he demonstrated to everyone in the crowd and everyone watching on television that he's not a leader. He's a follower. And every single one of these idiots that has gotten up there to run for president has done the exact same thing. They're not leaders. They're followers. And the only one that has not wavered in the face of all of his naysayers is Ron Paul.
You know, Ron, when you told me last night I wanted to bring it up, it didn't cross my mind, is that when you said his own son supported Mitt Romney, that's a bad sign. I mean,
I don't believe it is. I think people are reading into that more than meets the eye, or perhaps they're not reading into it enough. Ron Paul has done a yeoman's job for the idea of constitutional government over the last 30 plus years. What he's not been able to manage to do yet is to become elected president.
So do you think this was a key endorsement for Romney to pick his son for VP?
I think it was a key endorsement for Rand Paul. And it gets his nose even further under the tent, so to speak. Let's not forget that we still haven't had the convention yet.
Right, Exactly.
And Ron Paul spoke in his newsletter that we had 200 bound delegates. And I'm telling you, if you're a Ron Paul supporter and you've followed him, if you've been in this game since 08 with the Ron Paul folks, you begin to understand that there are little codes that come up, okay, in some of his letters. And the last one where he talked about having 200 bound delegates and some 300 unbound who are Paul supporters, totaling 500 delegates, he's given you a hint. We know by Rule 38 of the Republican National Convention that no delegates can be recognized as bound delegates. So he's playing to the crowd, not the Ron Paul supporting crowd, but to the media crowd, to the naysayers, that, yeah, you know, golly gee, we've only got 200 bound delegates and maybe another 300 that are unbound. I know that's not true because I know how many delegates he got in Colorado, Minnesota, Massachusetts, Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, Oregon. I mean, seriously, Texas. I think he's playing coy. And I think this move with Rand coming out endorsing Romney was twofold. Number one, I think that helps establish Rand Paul's credibility within the party as being different from his father and therefore a favorite son. The media loves him. They swoon over him. Okay, Hannity, and he made the announcement on Hannity's show, which ought to tell you something. Because Hannity has been one of the largest detractors of Dr. Paul. Okay. So I think he's opened the pathway for himself. And even if Paul doesn't get the nomination at the convention, which he probably won't, we are going to set the tone for the Republican Party's platform. Because we have a majority of delegates.
Right.
Those delegates from each state are the ones that change the rules and set the party platform for the coming year, 2 years actually.
So this actually could be like the silent Ross Perot giving the endorsement to his son to go for VP for Romney, and his delegates will support Romney. That, you know, just call it the day, right?
Yeah, I don't see that happening. And I know Ron Paul doesn't see that happening. Because, I mean, you look at the reaction that's been public on the internet that, you know, all these Ron Paul supporters are just scurrying Rand Paul and calling him, you know, a Judas goat and a traitor and everything else. And you know what? I mean, hopefully as time moves on, they'll recognize that that's not the case and they will put their support behind Rand Paul in the future. I'm hoping that's the case. And I think Ron Paul will probably help with that. Ron Paul... not doing anything to try and gain support for Mitt Romney.
Right.
And that's where I think people are mistaken in this whole thing. If you think for a moment that Rand Paul decided to come out on Hannity's show and endorse Mitt Romney and his dad didn't know about it and they didn't sit down and work this out to, I mean, really? I don't think so. I think he knows exactly what he's doing. I think his dad probably asked him to do it. Ron Paul can't do it without losing credibility. Rand Paul can. Now, he may lose some credibility, but he was kind of, you know, a lot of the Ron Paul supporters were kind of on the fence with Rand Paul. Weren't sure if he was really in dad's camp or not. Because he doesn't talk quite as forcefully about the Constitution Constitution and the Federal Reserve and some of the other issues as his dad does. He doesn't call for ending the Fed. He's just pushing the softer tone of auditing the Fed.
I have to hand it to Rand Paul in a certain respect, you know, trying to protect that Indian guy from, you know, finding Bin Laden and going after, you know, trying to get him out of prison. I mean, I have to give him credit where credit's due. I mean, he's the only one that stood up for the guy. You know, when no one else did. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, that was, you know, I felt that was a pretty well, you know, brave thing to do on his part. But who am I, except that I'm, according to Obama, that I'm just doing just fine.
Absolutely. Well,
right,
I've got something going on with my system here that it's not wanting to cooperate with me.
I just wanted to say a quick hello to you because I have class in a few minutes.
I'm glad you stopped in, and I wanted to try and get on early, you know, just to kind of vent on some of the stuff that's going on.
Yeah, I know. I tell you, the last night was great. You did a great review. That was a good show.
Well, I appreciate it, and you know, I wish I could have done the whole thing last night, and I wish I could figure out why my software is not responding. My screen is dead.
Oh no!
I can't toggle back between the studio, chat room, and anything. I mean, everything on my screen is just I can't change it. So bear with me a little bit, guys, because I may lose you. If I lose you, you know, log back in, because I'm going to try and get this situation repaired.
Ron, I'm going to say goodnight to you, and tell Michael I'm still out here.
Well, Michael is in the chat room, so Michael knows
he
you're
is.
Still out there. Yeah.
Tell Michael, I say hello to you.
Absolutely.
I tell him I miss his spankings.
Well, Michael is actually getting ready to move, and I think he's going to be out of pocket for a little while, is what he was explaining to me earlier.
But before he moves, tell Michael, if you're listening, before he moves, tell Michael, or if he's still listening on the show, that I would like if he could call me before he moves, because I need to discuss something of medically that is of importance to me, that I need to ask him a couple of questions.
Well, there you go. Aha. Finally.
I just need to ask him a couple of questions to verify what I really have. And then I'll try to play it.
Now, are you being facetious, Robert?
No, I'm not. I'm being serious. That's why I need to talk to Michael, because I need to ask him. I need a third opinion, so to speak.
Okay.
Michael will know what I'm talking about. He knows where I'm sure by now he knows where this is heading. I need to clarify it by through him, because it's almost related.
Okay. Well, he said he heard you, so.
All right. Tell him to give me a call.
All right.
Anytime before he moves. I lost his phone number. That's why I've been wanting to talk to him about, you know. So I just need to clarify some regarding symptoms. Okay?
All righty, sir.
All right, sir Ron, I'm heading on into class, and I'll see you guys later on. And, you know, y'all had a good three shows this Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Thank you, sir. God bless you. And have you seen Frank? Did he get out of jail down there?
No, I haven't. I have to pop in and see if he's still kicking. I'm sure he is, though. You know Frank.
Oh yeah. Well, I know that he had said that he was trying to get Holly to take him out of there the following day when we were there.
Oh really?
Yeah.
I'll check to see if he's out. I'll let you know.
All right, buddy.
I will, sir. Take care. Have a good show.
God bless, Robert. Thanks for calling in.
God bless you.
All right. Bye bye. And that was our resident Jewish individual, Mr. Tonto Goldberg, otherwise known as Robert Kaplan. And I know you guys know I got to meet Robert down in Florida, and he's quite a character. And I really enjoyed what little time I got to spend with Robert. And thank goodness I have control back of my studio here. So, needless to say, guys, when we look at the bigger picture of what came out of the Lincoln administration and the mindset of government worldwide at that time, I think it's not at all implausible that we end in the culmination of World War II, the creation of the United Nations, and the destruction of Germany. You've got the United States headlong on a path of building empire. And that was a dream of Hamilton, of Clay, Lincoln, and every single pea-picking idiot that came after them that believed in that system, the American system, the Hamiltonian system, that they wanted to build an empire to rival the Roman Empire, to rival the British Empire. That was the game. That was what was afoot. They even, all the way back in the administration of Lincoln and Johnson, they were discussing the idea of invading China, for God's sakes. They saw the whole world as ripe for their picking, which was in absolute contrast to the Founding Fathers and George Washington's admonition to avoid entangling alliances and to have free and open trade with all nations. They knew that these protective tariffs were nothing more than price controls and a way to funnel money back to their cronies. They may not have known that it was fascism because it hadn't been invented yet. The term hadn't been coined yet. But make no mistake, what they called mercantilism was nothing short of fascism. And we live in a country today that the majority of people, if you were to walk up and ask them on the streets, I doubt if they would even understand or know the word capitalism. But if they were going to put a label on our current society and government, they would say it's capitalism. And they would be dead wrong. It's not capitalism. It's fascism. There's no other way to look at it. Now, it might not be a perfect marriage between government and corporations, but it's not far off. And the military-industrial complex that Mr. Eisenhower warned us about is at the heart of it. And at the head of it is the Federal Reserve System. You know, someone called in the show a while back, Joe, and we were talking about a gold standard or silver standard or whatever the monetary standard would be, and how we could best implement a new monetary system, how to get the money into the hands of the people. I think the way that you implement it is exactly the way that they implemented the national banks, only in reverse. You remove the legal tender laws, and you allow for what Ron Paul has called for, competing currency. And yes, you would see a rush of currencies being created, banknotes. As long as we had a law that required gold in reserve, I think it'd be okay. The market will ferret out the no goods, the no accounts, the cheaters, the liars, and the thieves. They will go bankrupt. And eventually, the system will find equilibrium. It will find a balance. And when it does, we will once again begin to experience in the United States of America prosperity. And not a hollow, false prosperity propped up on pretend credit, underpinned by tremendous debt, but actual real prosperity and real charity, true charity. Can you imagine? These people wouldn't have to put on big concerts and pay celebrities and get all of these big names out there just to raise a few bucks for a charity. The American people, the average guy, would have more disposable capital than he's ever been accustomed to possessing. And one thing we can know for sure is that when you got a pocket full of money, you spend it. And that we truly do, as humans, have a good side. We do have a soft side where we look at the nature of our fellow man and we want to reach out and help when we see someone in distress. That's the kind of America I want to live in. Not this fascist crap that we've been raised in our whole lives and indoctrinated to believe is freedom. This isn't freedom. This is subjugation. It's control. I'm going to play a little song, and I'll be back in just a few minutes. See if I can pick a good one out here for you. I don't know that, I don't know if Miss Yola got to hear this one last night, since she said she didn't hear the show and she didn't get into the archives. I'm going to see if I can find it. We've got a lot of songs in here now. So, and I keep adding to the mix. Ah, there it is. This is just a little parody, but I really enjoy it. I hope you'll enjoy it too.
Adams, Mason, Franklin, Gary, Ames, and Washington. Lee and Rutledge, Hancock, Wilson, White. Sherman, Adams, Hall, and Rodney, Penn, and Dickinson.
For the 56 men who signed the Declaration of Independence and the 37 who signed the Constitution.
And here's to you, Mr. Jefferson. We all miss you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mr. Madison. Heaven help these fools that legislate. Rights away, our rights away. We'd like to know why you haven't read all the bills you filed. We'd like for you to read them for yourself. Look around you, all you see are patriotic guys. Stroll around the land, the brave and free gone. And here's to you, Mr. Jefferson. We all miss you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mr. Madison. Heaven help these fools that legislate. Rights away, our rights away. Hiding all your $1 trillion debt so we don't know.
Hide it in your made up FICA trust fund.
It's a little secret just the congressman will know. Worst of all, you pass this debt on to the kids. They think we're fools, Mr. Jefferson. We all miss you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mr. Madison. Heaven help these fools that legislate. Rights away, our rights away. Ripping up our Constitution every afternoon.
Give themselves a raise with no debate.
Laughing at our founding fathers when they've got to choose.
Everything they warned us coming true.
Where have you gone, Ron Wilson Reagan? Our nation turns its lonely eyes to you. What's that you say, Mr. Jefferson? The giver has left and gone away. And we prayed, wish he stayed.
All right, everybody, and we're back, and I was blessed to see we have Miss Linda's come in. Miss Yola had to go. Linda, yeah, I did start early today, and you missed out. I know you would enjoy it, and so I'm going to go back and see if I can find it. Earlier, I read a letter written to Abraham Lincoln by one of your favorites in history, Karl Marx, congratulating him on his nomination to the presidency for the second time around. And I also spoke about the fact that Hitler was rather admiring of Mr. Lincoln, as was Mr. Otto von Bismarck, I think probably. I don't know if von Bismarck was inspired by Lincoln, but he was doing much the same thing that Lincoln was doing, much at the same time, over in Germany and Austria. But, yeah, Mr. Marx had written a congratulatory letter. Yes. And this is in some of the comments in the back of the book, people criticizing the author of this book, The Real Lincoln, A New Look at Abraham Lincoln, His Agenda, Thomas DiLorenzo. And he says, writing in the Washington Times, Macubin Thomas Owens, who is also associated with the Claremont Institute, began his review by calling me a Marxist, while concluding that I was also a libertarian. Two designations that could not possibly be more contradictory. And then he goes on to say he is apparently unaware that Karl Marx himself wrote Lincoln in November of 1864, and I quote, Sir, we congratulate the American people upon your re-election by a large majority. And, of course, we know from yesterday and our history that the reason Lincoln enjoyed a large majority is because he'd pretty much stifled all the competition. If you came out in opposition to Lincoln, you were right likely to end up in military prison. Holy cow, this daggum phone, I'm telling you, is just off the rails today. Oh, Progressive. Ha, that's just too bad for you, Progressive. Anyone out there, if you have insurance with Progressive, cancel it. Get rid of it. They are part of the Soros. They're named aptly, Progressive. And by the way, Nationwide is a much better deal, or at least that's what I found. Saved me between my homeowners and my car insurance about $1,200 a year. So anyway, just wanted to kind of rehash that a little bit for Miss Linda, because I know how she adores Karl Marx and also the other inspirational writer, Mr. Adolf Hitler, who wrote about Lincoln and was very glowing about Lincoln's mannerisms in his book Mein Kampf. I guess having never read Mein Kampf, I didn't know that Hitler had written about it and had been an admirer of Lincoln's. But I can see the similarities in the two, as they certainly thought that their race was the pure one, the right one. And, you know, Lincoln, I don't know that he had any misgivings about the Jews necessarily, but he certainly didn't care much for the blacks that he supposedly was liberating in his war against slavery. What a joke. I wish I had known more of this a lot longer ago. Long ago, I had heard stories and never really looked into it. Oh yeah, they've been at it for a long time. But you know, the more I get into it and the more I understand the absolute just head bashing, you know, at odds, really putting that division into society. And while I don't want to sound like I'm okay with the idea of owning another human being as property, because I'm not, I would scarcely believe that the majority of slaves were treated more poorly by their masters than they were by society after their freedom. And a lot of that animosity came as a result of the Reconstruction Acts that were instituted after the war. Certainly, you know, we always hear the cases of the slave owners who just flogged their slaves and treated them like dirt. You never hear the stories, or very seldom. Jefferson, Washington comes to mind. And now maybe we understand a little bit better why there's this visceral reaction by the progressives about Thomas Jefferson. They try to portray Jefferson as a racist, slave-owning, rich white guy. And Washington was a slave owner too, you know. He wasn't any better. But they really don't like Jefferson. And it's funny, in a sense, because I think that their disdain for Jefferson has about as much to do with the fact that he was a slaveholder as the Civil War had to do with ending slavery. it's a race card. It's just a way for them to play the race card and to diminish the idea of limited government, of individual liberty, and individual sovereignty. And I've gotten a better insight into the mindset of these whacked out progressive nuts by reading through this book. It just makes so much sense. Now I get it more than I ever did. There isn't anything benevolent about their motives for the system that they want to see maintained in perpetuity and, in fact, expanded. When they talk about spreading democracy, by God, you can rest assured that what they're talking about is the kind of democracy we've got in this country right now, which is fascism. And they're going to wag their finger at the Republicans and say, oh, they're the party of the big corporate greedy guys. All these evil profits of these corporations. Yeah. They're just pissed because they're not in power and they're not getting the cream off the top. The other guys are. That's all it is. It's a big game. And all you've got to do is go look at the campaign contributions. Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citibank, Bank of America, Wells Fargo. I mean, seriously. Doesn't take a rocket scientist to put it all together. We know, you know, I think most of us have always known that that was the case. Myself, personally, I just didn't understand the nuts and bolts mechanics of it all. Exactly how it fit together. Now I get it. And I'm hoping that there's more out there, because I want to get it even more. Well, you know, Linda, I talked about the Fed earlier, and actually looking at the history of coming out of the Civil War into the Reconstruction era, moving forward into, and you got to understand, William Jennings Bryan. I think I'm saying that right. I don't know why I always have trouble with his name. But he was leader of the free silver movement. Yeah, and here's your Republican poster in 1896 attacking the free silver movement. The Coinage Act of 1873, which demonetized silver, was called the Crime of 73. So 1873. Now, you got to wonder why they wanted to demonetize silver. And it's William Jennings Bryan. So coming out of the Civil War, we talked yesterday briefly about the inflation that occurred when they flooded the market with greenbacks to the point that within a year they were worth 35 cents on the dollar. But we still had a gold standard, and they were taxing the banknotes, the state banknotes, at 10 cents on the dollar, trying to diminish the value of the state banknotes against the greenbacks. Now, this is exactly the system that Ron Paul has called for. Competing currency. Repeal the legal tender laws and allow us to have competing currencies. And when you see the federal government taxing the other money that it doesn't like, you'll know why. You know, that is exactly what Massachusetts was, or Maryland was going to do to the bank when we had the second Bank of the United States. So none of this should come as a surprise to anyone when we see the monetary aspect of it. And so in 1873, you've got this, they completely bastardized silver coinage. They demonetized it. How can you take silver out of circulation when it is the standard of measure that is mentioned in the Constitution not once but several times? It's called a dollar. So you see this leading into 1873 and then culminating in 1893. We've got the free silver movement. You've got the Wizard of Oz is out and talking about the monetary system and all of this junk going on in our system. And that leads us into the 1900s and the start of World War I and the adoption of the Federal Reserve Act after the Panic of 1904 and right into the League of Nations. They thought they could come together, these warring countries who were trying to consolidate their own continent into collectivism, into the social compact state, the social welfare state, the mercantilist system. They thought they could compact it even further, get a larger collective globally, the League of Nations. They could be more powerful together to force the other nations outside of their compact into capitulation, the same way they did to the South, the same way that Bismarck did to the nation states in Germany and Austria and France. It's absolute control. And of course that collapsed and they crushed Germany with all these demands, the Versailles Treaty, that inevitably led to Hitler's rise and the extermination of 6 million human beings plus. Meanwhile, we've got Stalin and Lenin, you know, they're trying to perpetrate their own little utopia. When is it going to be enough? When will it be enough? When will the people, not just in the United States, when will the people of the world determine they've had enough? We're not going to do this anymore. We're not going to continue funding centralized government. Now, a lot of people claim, you know, if we quit funding the massive centralized government, we'll descend into little warring factions and chaos all around the globe, just like it used to be when we had Genghis Khan and the mongrel hordes roaming the plains. Really? You know what? Would that be any different than what we have now? With the exception that here in the States, it would be on a more local scale. It'd be on your front doorstep. But what your government's doing is no different. They just use different weapons. They're not using guns. They're not sticking guns in your face and shooting you. Not all of you, anyway. No. they got you right where they want you. They got absolute control over you. They'll control all of your money and how and what you can spend it on. And you just don't have much of a choice. Now, as long as you can eat a burrito and drink a cold beer and watch a football game, you know, shut up and get back in line, slave. Shut up. You got to go to work tomorrow. What the heck's wrong with you? I don't know how to solve it all, except to go back to the government that we were supposed to have. Go back to the government that we, the people, authorized in the first place. Because what we have now is not what we authorized, was not authorized in the Constitution. It was not agreed upon by anyone. It was put upon us by military conquest. Lincoln was the only one that had balls enough to actually muster up the military and go out and conquer his enemies rather than waiting for the democratic process to work. The guy was a military dictator. There's no other way I can look at it. You know, I talked earlier about the irony of Dr. King giving his I Have a Dream speech on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. My God. And I wonder if he really knew and understood who Lincoln was. Or if he, like so many other Americans, believed the propaganda that was put out, and he didn't recognize that perhaps what he was asking for was to be even further enslaved by the system that they so wrongfully believed had set them free. That's really what we're talking about. Lincoln didn't free anybody. He enslaved an entire country. He destroyed nations and replaced them with one nation. One central, all-powerful, the all-knowing we ought to be really pissed about that. And I believe most of you are, and that's why we gather here at Patriot Families and Blog Talk Radio. And I agree, Linda, I would like a federal government so small that you would need an electron microscope to know that it's there. I don't want chaos. I don't want anarchy. I want a system of freedom and law, respect for individuals, no matter how much we might disagree with the individual and his proclivities or ideologies. I want to be left alone. I want to be able to spend time growing old and watching my children and grandchildren grow up and mature. I'd like to be able to strangle my dog for squeaking a rubber chicken while I'm on the radio. Not really. She's pretty good, but my wife bought her some floppy rubber chicken thing. And she just loves it, and it's kind of noisy, so I apologize. You know, I think it was Washington that spoke about, and I'll paraphrase because I don't have his quote in front of me, but he spoke about being a soldier and a leader of men into battle. He wanted to fight so that his son could be a farmer. Yes, she does love her squeaky toy. And she loves to bring it over here and squeak it right next to me when I'm on the radio, the little brat. But you know, that's really the idea. We don't want to be a nation of warriors. We just want to be left to our own devices, free to worship God the way we see fit, without the church or the government dictating to us how, when, where, and why we can do this worship. And it's really become very tiresome. But I think with everything that we see going on, it should also be an encouragement to us. I was speaking with a friend of mine earlier today, and he was talking about the different cycles, the ages. He has a little bit different theory on a few things than I do. But I think there's credibility in the idea that when we transition into a new age, there's always some kind of turmoil. And it can't come too soon. It can't come soon enough, in my book, because we see it's been 151 years. That freedom, true freedom, the real system that was hard won in our war to secede from Britain. That's exactly what it was. The Revolutionary War. It wasn't a revolution. It was a war of secession. The colonies wanted to secede from the British Empire, and they did. But as we transition, as we see these things going on today, it seems every day more and more and more of the evil and the absolute ridiculous garbage is coming to light. And that should give us cause for encouragement, because that means more and more of it is getting exposed, more and more people are realizing the truth of it all. And that means that the country is moving in a direction that eventually is going to move us away from those things and back towards that Jeffersonian idea. And that's where I want to be. I want to be in that Jeffersonian ideology, that Jeffersonian idea. Not because I want to own slaves. We're past that. Thank God we're past that. To be free. Even those people that I disagree with vehemently, I want them to have that same freedom. And I understand better now how these people have twisted the idea, the Constitution, the more perfect union. I mean, seriously, the very idea that the Union created the states, I see how they get that. I see how they make that leap. But it flies in the face of reality. And it flies in the face of the plain written language of the Constitution that created the very union that they talk about. And I know now better than ever that when I read about Abraham Lincoln trying to preserve the Union, at all costs, save the Union. Yeah. The Union. I know what Union he's talking about. And now you do too. It was a union of power in a central national government. It's what Hamilton saw when he was arguing during the Constitutional Convention. He saw that the direction the convention was going and the language that they were adopting was sufficient to be used to create his dream of a national government with no state sovereignty. And Abraham Lincoln was the first one, the only one, with the courage to wage war on his own fellow citizens to bring about the realization of that union. We've talked about many different people on my show over the last couple of years. FDR, Wilson, Hitler, Stalin, Mao. None have been more instrumental in absolutely destroying the founders' intent and idea, the idea that was the United States of America, the more perfect union than Abraham Lincoln. And I'm glad that I was able to share this information with you guys. And there's going to be more information to come. There's going to be more revelations. There's going to be more revealing and unveiling of all of the various evils until we understand it so very well that when we wrest control of our own destiny, our own freedom, away from the evil claw of government, that we will not be fooled again, and that we will hopefully pass on this information to our children and our grandchildren, and pass it on to them in such a way that they will never be deceived, that they will never be fooled into falling for the trap that will inevitably be set for them again and again. We cannot allow the liars to control who writes history. We cannot allow the liars to control the monetary system, the government, or even one small aspect of our lives. I understand that we need to put God in control and put God first. I recognize that. But we do have to have some form of governance here in the physical world. One that doesn't put us in the position of being judgmental of our fellow man, but one that also punishes specific transgressions or trespasses without being vindictive. It can be done. It was attempted. And slavery is the one spot, blemish, on that idea. There's a lot of arguments to be made about allowing it to die its natural death. And you know, the United States is the only country in the entire world that fought a war, allegedly, over slavery. But we already know that that's not true. They didn't fight a war over slavery. They used that as a political tool. Just like health care. The whole health care bill. I don't think there's anyone listening to me right now that doesn't recognize that that health care bill is a scam. And it has far less to do with health care than it does with controlling every aspect of your life. And I notice that our Supreme Court has yet to render a verdict. Not that I have any confidence that they'll overturn it, or even part of it. Guys, I'm going to take another short break and play a little more music. And I'll be back in just a few minutes if I can find the appropriate song that I want. Yeah, let's play this one. I haven't heard this one in a while.
And I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder. One of the four beasts saying, "Come and see." And I saw, and behold, a white horse.
There's a man going round taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around. The hairs on your arm will stand up at the terror in each sip and in each sup. Will you partake of that last offered cup, or disappear into the potter's ground when the man comes around? Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers, 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wicks. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. Till Armageddon, no shalom, no shalom. Then the father hen will call his chickens home.
The wise men will bow down before the throne, and at his feet they'll cast their golden crowns. When the man comes around, whoever is unjust, let him be unjust still. Whoever is righteous, let him be righteous still. Whoever is filthy, let him be filthy still. Listen to the words long written down when the man comes around. Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers, 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wicks. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. In measured 100 weight and penny pound, when the man comes around. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts, and I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death. And hell followed with him.
All right, guys, and that's Johnny Cash, When the Man Comes Around. I don't know about you, but you know that end right there when he talks about the pale horse, and just the voice, it just gives you chills listening to that. And I know we all wonder, or at least I do, you know, are we in those end times that so many people talk about? And my good friend Dean Shook does a ministry program on Blog Talk about end times prophecy. And I tend to lean more towards the preterist view, as you probably are most all fully aware. But I'm not 100% convinced one way or the other. I always leave open the possibility that I'm absolutely wrong. And if I am, then I hope to God that those that are listening to me and many others get their house in order, and that many will not suffer through the trial and tribulation period, because it will not be pleasant. And I just hate the idea of someone suffering, even those that I dislike, and I dislike their actions or their ideas, their ideology. You know, I think we could all agree that, you know, most of us, we don't have a whole lot of affectionate feelings towards, you know, a Nancy Pelosi or a Barney Frank or a Harry Reid or a Barack Obama. But I really don't hold any ill will towards them. I don't want to see them hurt or injured in any way. I don't want to see them suffer in any way. It just wouldn't be right. Wouldn't be right at all. And I know we all joke around about it, and, you know, I talked about it last night, that we really need to have that humility and that love, even for those who are our enemy. And it's something very difficult to accomplish. It's certainly not easy. We want to have that killer instinct and really go after them. We want retribution, you know? We want some vengeance. But we really better be careful about that. And I see we got Mr. Brian popping in the chat room. Brian, welcome aboard. Glad to have you in. I take it you got done arguing with the lawyer on the telephone. So that's always a plus. And I'm sure you're not arguing about kind of a mortgage note. Now, is this your lawyer, or is this a lawyer for someone else, or is this the lawyer you guys are using for the mortgage thing? Just curious, trying to kill some airtime, because I really don't have... Let's say just trying to kill some airtime. I put us on for 3 hours, not knowing exactly how many were going to show up. And I started early. I started at 6. So I apologize to those of you that didn't get the message early enough. Yeah, go ahead and call in, man. I'm just trying to fill some thoughts. I really, this is one of the first times that I've run out of things to talk about or it could just be that I'm trying to eat a burrito. But I'm glad to see that we've got a lot of folks in the chat room. And we've got a guest there. Not sure who the guest is. It could be Mr. Rod Luke. It might be my buddy Dean Shook. Or it might be somebody completely different. And Brian, you said it's me calling, but I don't see no phone calls coming in yet. You sure you're calling the right number? I'm going to put it back in the chat room just to be sure. Unless you're going to call in on Skype, which we can do that as well. Oh, no problem, man. I think Miss Linda was going to call in here in a moment also. And, yeah. I'd like to maybe take the last hour and just have you guys chime in and talk about things that you want to discuss, things that are on your mind. I'd love to hear Brian fill us in on the Wells Fargo attorney and what's going on there. And I know Miss Linda's always got something cooking out there in California and usually something new coming up on A21. Or Bill, we haven't heard from you in a while. Always enjoy hearing from Mr. Bill Strong. Michael, you're welcome to call in. Milady, Kyra, you as well. So if anybody's got anything on their minds, the call-in number is 646-378-0321. And just call in and, you know, maybe you think I'm full of BS and you want to call in and vent. That's good, too. I'm a big boy. I can take it. Really didn't see any news today. I've been kind of living in a shell the last couple of days. So I haven't heard much of what's going on. And, well, Linda, if you're in the queue, I don't know where. Bear with me. I'm going to refresh my studio and see if there's something crazy going on. I hope I don't lose everybody. And it may be. I was having problems with, hey, there everybody is. Wow. Bang. Mr. Brian and Miss Linda, there, your guys are both on now. Sorry about that. I don't know what was going on with the system here.
Hey.
Right.
I know, because I couldn't figure out what was happening. Yeah. But I could hear you. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what the heck was going on. I didn't see anything in the queue, and then I hit refresh on a wing and a prayer, and poof, there you were, both of you.
Wow.
Yeah, that's like when I log in, and is that the first time? I usually have to, for some weird reason, refresh the page automatically just to get to show that I'm even on the page or in the queue or on the one of the, actually active and
all
whatever.
Board, yeah. Wow.
Well, BTR certainly has its share of glitches, but I'm glad they're here nonetheless.
So, Brian, what's on your mind today?
Yeah.
Oh, just, the usual and glamorous financial
institution. Yeah, what's got the Wells Fargo attorney all bunched up in his britches?
Well, if they're going to proceed to try to take this client to court, they have to start all over.
Well.
At their expense.
That would do it.
which means, potentially, well, I'm sure he's smart enough to know that I'm going to make a suggestion that since they're footing the bill now, that they have to defend their right as, a true party of interest. So that opens up the lawsuit to be filed I'm not real definite on this, but I'm pretty sure that now that they have to defend, they have to defend the title, they have to defend their right of, their party, that they're a party of interest, and go through all that crud, basically back to square one again, that it leaves open for my client to come in and say, well, again, no, you're not. And then they're basically, it's like a reverse way of making them actually, since they have to defend the title, making them put the bill and get sued while they pay for it.
that's my
goal is to try to see if they, since they're already there and having to say, because actually the court date my client has coming up, he's going to just go in and say, well, they can't file a foreclosure. This foreclosure is not kind of, a true process of foreclosure because A, B, and C has happened. And so this is really all knowing, the whole process at this point is null and void. And they'll acknowledge that. And then they're going to look to the lawyer and say, well, what are you going to do? And then he's going to say, well, I filed for a new court date and whatever to, go through this and do all these, proper filings and get all the notice of foreclosure done. This is a default and all that and blah, blah, blah in place. But it's no good, though, because it's already that paperwork is no good anyways, even if they straighten it out, because they've already claimed suit the first time on the same property. So they can't come back after the fact, readjust the proper chain of title and the notice of default, and then try to proceed. So this guy doesn't understand that or whatever. He's not a real, he's not a securitization, real lawyer or really into mortgage work at all or something to that effect. Because if he knew that, he would be, or if he does know it, then he's playing it cool and calm and collective. But if he doesn't know it, when he finds out, he's going to be really, really, really up a creek without a paddle, because they have none other.
They have no other recourse at that point.
Right. So basically, they footed the bill to sue them, get sued. at least the first couple of steps of the bill to get sued. So, because all we, she's got to do, they're gonna. I'm gonna talk to them about doing. Actually, when the next case, I'm gonna suggest to the guy's lawyer, because you know the whole Constitution issue with being able to, you know, what the heck, you know what I'm talking about, Ron?
The right to a trial by jury for any case.
Right to trial by jury, right. The right to trial by a jury. Well, the statement clause is not in his mortgage to block that. So now is the time that his attorney can actually put this into effect and battle it out with Wells Fargo by jury. So I'm really hoping this guy does it, or his attorney will, and go to town. Because they've already put the bill, going to have to put the bill for the next couple of court cases just to defend themselves. So
wow.
If he can get a request by jury trial, yay, go tell it on the mountain. But
that's the Seventh Amendment, Brian.
Yeah, I know him. I had some discombobulating incidents happen, or just something happened a few minutes ago before I got home and called in. That just kind of got me messed up. So I just kind of like. Aside from the whole attorney thing, too, I just been like shocked. But anyway, when they go to foreclose on somebody, they have to have that notice of default. And what they did was they mailed my client a company letterhead as a notice of default. It has to be recorded in the county of the property. It has to be all those actions have to be recorded for the notice of default and, you know, anything to do with the foreclosure process. Well, they sent him a company letterhead, and it wasn't even recorded or signed or anything in the county. It didn't even have a notary signature. It was just Wells Fargo Bank.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And so this guy was thinking he's going to have to move in about 3 weeks. And
I never thought of that, Brian, but that – I would imagine they would run into that problem quite a bit because many of those mortgages aren't recorded in the county anyway.
Right. Yeah. Most of them, like the couple hundred I've put my hands on, they've been recorded in the county, but they did, you know, they were trying, like with that MERS thing.
Right.
It's like a messed up deal because it almost seems like, you know what, I'm going to have to, you know what, you just might hit the nail on the head. Because this is weird. Now that you got me thinking here, because they created MERS to hold the copies of the mortgage to, you know, to their...
Right, and they weren't filing those mortgages at the clerk's office. They created their own mortgage filing system. That bypassed the county.
Right, but people are getting copies of their mortgages from the counties. Like our clients that come to me and Kim, they're getting them from the county. But what I need to start figuring out is maybe I'm going to have to start looking into that. I'm going to have to figure out, I had to look and investigate when they recorded it in MERS, and then did they record it in the county? I'm going to have to start trying to tie that date together. Oh, yeah, okay, so I could tie it together by, let's see, not so much recorded at MERS because they recorded their database, but I could catch the recording, the difference of dates between the recorded, so-called recorded date, if it's on the mortgage from the county, with the, you know, where they got it logged and
right.
The document number and all that stuff in the county, to the notice of default date. Because if it's just right around
exactly.
Wow.
So if it's a period of right around the default date, like within a 30-day period, that means they were,
That's even more fraud. Right. They're going in and that's why when I heard you talking about that, I'm like, well, wait a minute. I know for a fact that the whole reason they were using MERS to begin with was that it stood for Mortgage Electronic Registration System.
Right. But it was trying to, I didn't think of, a way to really pin the fact that they just recorded it in the MERS system, because it would be it would be retarded, because then the lie, you would catch them in their lie. Oh my, this is like Christmas early. Okay, so you could catch them in their lie.
Yes.
The whole process of MERS was to evade paying the recording fees in the county. Well, now they're having to do it anyways.
Yeah, they're going to have to go in, and there's no way the county clerk is going to go along with backdating this stuff for them.
Right, because it's their rear on the line for forgery.
Right, unless they can go in and go, oh, gosh, we've just been so behind with all the work. You know, I've got all these mortgages I need to get registered, and they're looking at the dates of them, and they've got them backdated on the paperwork.
Right, but there's going to be some that are going to be, even if that were the case, there would be some still true to date that they wouldn't,
right.
You know,
right.
They wouldn't be backlogged that bad. But that mean, because that would totally defeat their purpose that they went and created own.
Yeah, they were trying to keep those mortgages off the books, so to speak, at least at the county clerk level.
Right, so they didn't have to pay for it, the recording.
Well, not only did they not have to pay for the recording, but it allowed them a little more transparency in shuffling those notes and mortgages around and packaging them up and selling them off, and in many cases even duplicating them.
Right. Right, yeah, that's where the document now starts. But that's pretty... That's the bomb.
You're welcome.
That's right. Yeah, right. Hey, sometimes, man, it's from outside. You know, I get so buried ripping into the deeper end of it that sometimes even the light, you know, it's the little goofy thing that it can be just as, because I'm so busy.
You get so close to it, that, you know, you get lost in the morass of all the other stuff.
I'm so busy beating up the other end of the fraud that even the little light end stuff is even just as damaging, because then now they're committing fraud on a county, a huge county and state level, because fraudulently recording documents is
that's a big no-no.
Big no-no. At that point, and we wish I'd have was deputized, because then I could just arrest them. The lawyer and his client, or his client.
Well, you don't necessarily have to be deputized, but what you could do is just call 911.
Yeah.
And ask
sheriff's
office. Absolutely. And tell him, hey, this guy's committed fraud. I want to swear out a formal complaint, and I want him arrested. He's standing right here in front of me. Oh, yeah. That's what my buddy did that, brain freeze. I can't think of his name now. Down in Texas, when he had the county clerk arrested.
Right on. Wow.
Because she tried to charge him $15 to file a writ of habeas corpus, and under Texas law, that's not allowable. The writ of habeas corpus is absolutely undeniable, the right to the writ of habeas corpus, and they can't charge you a fee for it. And she argued with him, and he said, oh, no problem. He just picked up the cell phone and hit 911 and said, I need the sheriff out here to arrest the clerk.
That's great.
Wow.
See, that's what we have to start doing. Everybody has to know their rights and start pushing back. And, you know, it's funny because you were in between the time that I actually called in and you couldn't see me on the board, and you were saying that I usually have Agenda 21 news. Well, what happened today was my sister and her husband came over, and we were talking a little bit about the last meeting, because we were giving Karen the tape. My mom had recorded it, because the city council meetings are actually put out on KOCT, which is just kind of closed circuit for Oceanside. And so I was explaining that the action group, which was fighting Prop ENF, were there and speaking. And I was talking about all these things, and I was kind of going a little bit over Agenda 21, and Henry says, well, what's that? He doesn't know. So I kind of gave him the count, and I said, we've got, you know, in the early 90s, Nancy Pelosi on YouTube on tape in the House floor pushing it right after this Rio Earth Summit. And he says, so Nancy Pelosi's involved in this too. And I said, oh, God, yes. I said, would you like me to name some more? I mean, they don't. And he says, but why are they doing this? And I said, because people, Ron, people don't understand. They can't grasp that these people are evil. They go, well, why would anyone want to do that? And I said, to control us. I tried to tie it into the age of catastrophe under Stalin and the rest of them. I said, they want to create that same hell on earth here for us. They want us to live like North Korea right now. I
Can
said,
you imagine?
People. And he says, oh, my God. I says, yeah, why do you think I'm fighting this stuff? You know, I said, I'm going to keep waking people up, man. I says, this is crazy, and I'm going to stop them. So
right.
He did not know.
I'm telling you, after reading this book on Lincoln, I'm just floored because it makes more sense now than it ever did.
Right, right.
You know?
Well, you know, here's like everybody... Everybody sees the fruition of all of these things. Maybe we just didn't know the origins of it. Now we've got more insight. You read that book, which is with something else to connect dots to. But I just, you know, as you know, I'm fighting the evil that's in front of me in my own town, and my state and the entire country, because this ICLEI, man, that is the evil arm of that United Nations, and they put them together because they knew they couldn't get it through Congress. And that's how they did it. And I'm telling you, if the more people I can explain this to and say, look, I told Henry, I says, well, in 2035 and 2050, you may not be here and I may not be here. I says, but your grandchild's boyfriend who loves to surf too or whoever, you know, that's young, they ain't going to be able to if these guys get their way. I said, we are the enemy to these people. We're like parasites. I said, they want to reduce the population by 80%.
Yep.
And he says, how are they going to do that? I said, well, various ways. Look at Monsanto with the food stuff. I said, look at the health care bill. You know, I said, the death penalties are in place already. I said, and everybody else that they want to get rid of, if they can't inoculate them out or whatever, they'll just shoot them. Once it comes down to it, people who don't go along with it, you think they won't? Of course they will. Boy, you know, evil doesn't change its stripes. And, I don't carry hate in my heart, Ron. But I know that these are God's enemies, and if he's going to punish them and have his vengeance, I say more power to him.
Yeah,
you know,
let me be the one that delivers them up to you, Lord.
We'll arrange the meeting, yeah.
Absolutely.
But, you know, it's up to him, and if they make their choice that they want to follow Satan, then I can't do it. I mean, Jesus is the only one that can touch their hearts. I pray for that, but if they make the wrong choice, I can't stand between them and the Lord, you know. That's not my place. That's Jesus and them, and you know, they got to deal with it.
Yeah, no, I understand, and I know you don't have hate in your heart, but it's easy for us to get distracted, and just like Brian was talking about, you know, you get so involved and so close to what it is you're working on that you miss the little stuff sometimes.
Right.
And we can get so involved and so wrapped up in fighting it that we associate all of the evil with the person that's standing in front of us, and that's the thing that, you know, I just want to reiterate to
right.
I do it. I mean, we all
like
do
guy,
it.
Yeah, yeah. The
None
guy
of
that
us
was
are
in
innocent.
Yeah, the guy that was in the room. I mean, I was like blood was shooting out of my eyes, but I wasn't trying to, you know, hate the person.
Right. No,
it was because what I was hating was what he's tied to and what is. This ideology that he's pushing and ramming down the city of Oceanside. So I'm just thinking to myself, okay, the more people that I can tell and really get on board with this, to understand it, to grasp the whole concept of what they want to do to us, then if we get enough of us en masse, we can stop it. That's what I'm saying. Because, numbers trumps money when you got the truth on your side. So
that's absolutely correct. And I, you know, I wasn't trying to say that you had hate in your heart. We all know that, as we should. We all should be pissed. I know Brian gets pissed over the mortgage thing. He was mad about. I was sitting there watching it, and I just wanted to scream when all this stuff was going on. And I had read about it before in mm-hmm. our history. Something
sure.
that not on the same. I mean, it wasn't exactly the same, but I'm telling you, if you go back and read our monetary history, 1873 to 1894, we had a housing bubble.
Oh my gosh!
Yes, there was a housing bubble, and you know all the carpetbaggers. You go back and read about the carpetbaggers
sure.
and all that. Those carpetbaggers were enabled by the system that Lincoln put in place.
Oh my gosh!
So I mean, it all ties together. It's
sure.
one long continuous string, and you know
mm-hmm.
it's all broken up, and we just have to figure out where to connect the dots.
Right, and basically, what we have to do is, like you say, we've got to get back to what the founders really, really envisioned for us, and actually wrote on paper, but nobody is reading it as the words say. You know, they just put their own spin on it because of their ideologies, and it. To me, it's just not right, and there's no reason why we can't have true freedom, you know, if we just keep fighting for it. You know, it's not going to come without some sacrifice and a lot of due diligence and everything else we can muster up, and we've got the tools, like we said. I mean, if you want to put the kibosh, like the guy, get a good constitutional sheriff on the phone and have these people arrested.
Absolutely.
You know, we got to learn these things and utilize these things and understand what our rights are. And if
and
we
you
don't
know
they're going to run you over, man. They will have you in serfdom so quick.
and it kills me that we have people out there that, and I'm sure are well-meaning. I had
mm-hmm.
a guy send me some stuff when I was online down in Florida, and he actually sent me some books.
Okay.
And I think his heart is in the right place. His name is Ted Wieland. And he's got a real passion for trashing our Constitution.
Oh my gosh!
But from a Christian perspective, and so he sent me this little book, "Bible Law versus the United States Constitution," and I was trying to have a conversation with him in a chat, and that's very difficult to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, from where I stand, and I may be 100% wrong. I don't believe that I am, but I could be. And I told him, I said, look, man, what you're advocating has already been tried and failed. That you know, the system that was implemented for Abraham and again under Moses
mm-hmm.
and finally ended under the Pharisees and the Sadducees in Jerusalem. That's
mm-hmm.
what you're talking about, creating a theocracy. We've tried that. We've tried that, and it didn't work. And God told you it wasn't going to work because it's still left to the hands of men. And when you put a collective together and you give them authority above the rest,
mm-hmm.
it's game, set, and match. It's only a matter of time. And
right.
What I see in my scripture, in my Bible, what my Christ taught me is that each one of us individually should be governed by God.
Right. We are sovereign.
Right. And if each individual allows himself to be governed by God and by God's word, then the collective doesn't matter because the whole collective is doing the same thing. And those that aren't, well, there's no way that I want to say, well, you know what, because this group isn't doing what I feel is
right.
I should create a government that follows my idea of God's law, and we're going to implement it, and you know, pretty soon I'm the Nation of Islam.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, because that's one of the things the founders were terrified of. That's why they wrote the First Amendment the way they did. They did not want a theocracy, and the other things they were concerned about, which now we see, is that federal government becoming the Leviathan that it has.
Sure. They
and
wanted
so
to,
they,
absolutely, they wanted to bind it down with the chains of the Constitution. And the idea, and one of the things he points to that, you know, is because of the no religious test. And I asked him, I said, have you researched that? Do you understand why they put that in there? And the primary reason was the state of Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to put a religious lost in there, then what? How are you going to phrase that? That you have to be a Christian. Okay, well, let's see. The Mormons claim to be Christian. The Baptists, the Lutherans, the Methodists, the Catholics. Where do we draw the line? Because there's all these conflicting ideologies within the umbrella of Christian.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my question is, really, how do you do that? The only way you could possibly get to that is to have God write that Constitution for you. And he has, and it's in the Scripture. And guess what? The whole rest of the collective isn't going to be there backing you up when it's judgment day for you. It's
That's
just going to be you and the man. And, you know, so stop looking to us to make any excuses, from what I can see.
Right.
And trying to blame the whole fate of the U.S. or whatever on the fact that the Constitution wasn't written after one individual's interpretation of the Bible. And I'm like, how do you get there? How do you get there from here? I don't understand that.
That's bizarre. Yeah. Well, you know, there's been a lot of craziness over the weekend, you know. I was giggling because, and I shouldn't like make fun of them, I guess, but we all do it. Axel Brain and Zero, they're stuttering over their words and not answering the questions, and the whole thing. I mean, it's clear as mud, clear as day that every word that comes out of their mouth is just it's pure socialism or Marxism. I mean, what did Axel Brain say? He said. Oh, he says, in order to fix the economy and to help the private sector, we have to hire more teachers.
That's because they believe in the system. They believe in this American system that Lincoln and the rest of them got instituted. And the way to salvation for them is more government spending.
It's like Comedy Central. But, you know, only because I'm somewhat educated. I mean, I'm not a scholar, but at least I know the difference between Karl Marx and James Madison.
Sure. Now, we could argue there's not
to me,
we could argue there's not a whole lot of difference between Marx and Lincoln, I think, at this point. But
absolutely. Yeah.
You know, I have to agree with the author when he called Lincoln America's Stalin.
Yeah,
you're talking 625,000 of your own citizens.
God.
Not a foreign, you know, even I think in a foreign invasion, it's untenable to be, you know, that massive loss of life.
We had more loss in that war than I think seven others combined in soldiers. Yeah.
I read that. The author was saying in here, adjusted for inflation, adjusted for our current population versus the population at the time, it would be the equivalent of us losing 5 million men in Vietnam.
Yeah, exactly. It's horrible. I mean, and now that we're getting the real history, God. Makes you sick.
You have to laugh at some point because it's just so utterly infuriating.
Well, you know, it's even hard for us to grasp, and that's why I understand my brother-in-law not being able to see what I'm talking about, and they look at me like I'm Alex Jones or, you know, somebody that's got a tinfoil hat, you know, and they think I'm crazy, but I said, look, I've got this folder. I said, I'm doing this research for 2 years. I have stuff from gentlemen in here who have been researching it for 15 years. I said, they did this thing in 20 years ago in Rio. I said, and they've got a head start on us. Of course they're not going to come out and tell you in the newspaper.
Linda, you gave me a fabulous idea. I'm going to buy you a bullhorn.
Yay.
That would be a deadly weapon in Oceanside. Linda with a bullhorn.
With my convertible car so I can go up and down the streets. Oh, my God.
Absolutely.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'll tell you, I could get myself in trouble with one of those. Oh, man. Talk about
that is awesome.
Beforehand.
Just the Alex Jones comment, I thought, man, a bullhorn. She's got to have one. and I believe we've got Mr. Michael Magic on the line.
Awesome. Absolutely awesome. Great, Michael. Hello, Michael.
Good evening, Linda, Ron, and everyone in the chat room. What an honor to know all you people and be here this evening.
Cool.
Well, thank you. What's on your mind, Mr. Michael?
Not a whole lot. I've been sort of in and out, but I did hear you talking a little bit about wars.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, wars are, you know, what we're seeing happening right now with the global elite, the United Nations, and what is happening globally, okay, has been done, but in different ways throughout history. Wars have never been caused by, you know, I don't like you, Ron, and so my family is going to attack your family, and that starts, you know, a 2 or 3 or 4 or 10 country war. Okay, it
right.
is always the higher ups, the greedy, the corrupt. Okay,
wars come from governments.
Exactly, and they fund them on both sides so that they end up getting what they want out of it. I mean, they make money. They make money off of wars.
Yes, they do. It's disgusting. Well, that's today Glenn was talking about the Federal Reserve, and he had his chalkboards out, and he was showing the money laundering Ponzi scheme shell game that it actually is. And he said they're doing it in Spain, and they're doing it in Europe, and they're doing it here. And it makes Madoff look like he was just Ponzi scheming some dollar store. You know, I mean, this is such a huge scale, and why we don't aren't able to end the Fed. It never should have been around in the first place, but
I want to share with you guys an email that I got, and this is one of those things that it's on the level of just too grandiose to be believed, but at the same time, in light of everything going on, you know what? I don't discount a little sliver of possibility. So don't think I'm reading this as the gospel, but you know, the other night we talked about what was going on up in Indiana and Michigan, right at the border with Indiana and Michigan, right in that area. And the elevated radiation levels that...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how many of you guys are familiar with the story, but it's been out there for a few days. It's been all over the internet, but there's been no media coverage anywhere that I've seen. And it could just be a coincidence and a bunch of fear-mongering, where, you know, maybe the military was running some exercise or drill or something up there. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I do know is that there are various radiation detection sites around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them are run by the government. And they're online. You can go online and look at and monitor the different areas in each state. But aside from those, there's also independent monitors that people, you know, they go out and they do that on their own. And on the night in question, one of the radiation detection pieces of equipment up in that area shot off the charts to like 7,500. The government quickly shut down the site and said that it was a glitch with the monitor. The problem with that is that it was also that level was recorded by 3 or 4 other stations that were not government monitored. So you would have to say that all these monitors had the same malfunction at the same time. That's not likely true. Several of the residents in the area were reporting seeing the Chinook helicopters, the ones with the tail rotor and the front rotor. So they have the two big rotors on them. Some refueling aircraft, and this is interesting, an A-10 Thunderbolt or an A-10 Warthog, which is a tank-killing piece of equipment.
gosh.
And so here, without further ado, is the email report. 380 American rebels reportedly killed in Michigan battle. A shocking Federal Security Service report circulating in the Kremlin today states that last week an intense battle erupted in the U.S. state of Michigan between military forces loyal to the Obama regime and American rebels that killed at least 380 men, women, and children who gathered to oppose their nation's slide towards a totalitarian dictatorship. According to this report, nearly 500 people who oppose Obama had assembled for a quote-unquote clandestine meeting in the Michigan country of Alpena in an effort to form a 50-state alliance of local law enforcement and political officers seeking to turn the tide of their nation's path towards dictatorship, even should it be necessary by armed force. The FSB states in this report that hostilities erupted when the American rebels gathered at the meeting identified several undercover informants, FBI, who were seeking to escalate tensions and arrest them, whereupon within minutes, a contingent of heavily armed federal police forces attempted in turn to arrest the rebels. A prolonged skirmish took place, which culminated in a U.S. military 2,000-pound laser-guided bomb being dropped on them, and there were reports up there of explosions. One guy had the recordings of it. You could hear them off in the distance.
A
local Michigan reporter named Bob Powell, who wrote at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, a mysterious explosion shook homes over hundreds of square miles in northeastern Michigan. The ground-shaking explosion was heard from Presque Isle to Lincoln, and out west as far as Hillman. Important to note is that this reporter was swiftly detained and arrested by federal forces when he attempted to gather more information.
Jesus.
Over the next 48 hours since the initial bomb drop upon the rebels, this report continues, U.S. military forces, numbering in the high hundreds, descended upon Michigan utilizing nearly 85 combat transport helicopters and an A-10 Thunderbolt air-to-ground missile-equipped fighter aircraft. Confirming the chaos of this battle, we can also read as confirmed by the Natural Society News Service, which in part says, and then they repeat the article that I sent you the other night, Linda.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Ron.
Yes, sir.
If you're finished with that, I can add to it.
Sure.
Okay. First of all, as far as Alpena, Michigan goes, okay, the largest FEMA camp in the United States is Camp Grayling. It is located 20 to 30 miles away from Alpena. I've done research on this in the past, and you also mentioned something about how far away explosions were heard as far as Presque Isle, I believe you said.
Yes.
And Presque Isle is in Marquette, Michigan, which is 13 miles from me by, you know, air. I would say that is probably a good 200 give or take miles away from Alpena area. But Camp Grayling is the largest FEMA camp in the United States.
Good grief. Oh.
Well, you know, it's just odd that it ever even came up, because one of my guys at work asked me if I knew anything about it, and I said, I don't know what you're talking about. I hadn't heard anything, you know. He goes, yeah, man, it's all over the internet, but the news isn't reporting on it. And so I went in and did a little quick, you know, research on it. And according to what I found, it was in northern Indiana, Michigan area. Now, I didn't look at a
well,
map.
Well, that's not good because there's a nuclear plant over there.
Right. I think that's what they were talking about.
And this is really funny. I don't mean to cut you off, but
that's all right.
That nuclear. Okay, I've got close personal friends that live in Niles, Michigan. So you got to basically come around the butt end of Lake Michigan to get over to her. Okay. Now, right there, just up the road. I forgot the little town. Oh, I don't have it. Oh, this is cool. It's really messed up, but it's my other cell phone that took a swim in the Rock River. It had pictures. There's this nuclear plant right there on Lake Michigan. It's probably not but a few miles, you know, probably 10 miles off of Lake Michigan.
Wow.
Right over there. It's like Michigan-Indiana border, right? And because it's just right up the road from the casino. So one time I was going over to visit my buddies, and I had to use the bathroom like no man's business. So I pulled in this bathroom right across from the nuclear plant, and their bathroom was in this bathroom. It was somebody broke the stall or whatever, so it couldn't go. And so I traveled across the street over by the nuclear plant, and because I thought it was another gas station, like a small service station. Well, it wasn't. But there was an entranceway, actually, to the nuclear plant parking lot. So I thought, well, I'll just go in the office and see if I can maybe get them to, you know, let me use their bathroom. And so the gate that I went into, I didn't put two and nine together, because after I looked back over my shoulder, I crossed through a guard passing into the employee parking lot, right? There was no guard at the parking lot. We should have probably been sitting there, because once I got to this office area, I was probably 30 feet from a reactor. So I go in this door thinking it was the front office, and lo and behold, I'm in the back door of the engineering room.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And I got to looking around, thinking, okay, this isn't an office area. I must be in some other weird space or whatever, or like a maintenance area or something to that effect. And so I kind of poked around a little bit, and I looked through this door, and there's all these fancy buttons and glow lighting up, and people in there doing their thing, and everybody's walking around with their thumbs up their butt pretty much. And, I just like, uh-oh, I realized I was in, would normally be a restricted area. And so I walked right back out the door, and once I figured out where I was at, I was pretty scared and nervous. So I took pictures of everything. And since I was there, I might as well enjoy it. So I took some snapshots and then walked out the door, and some people see me. They're like, oh, hey, how you doing? You going home? Yeah. Yeah, I just jumped in my car and took off like a bat out of hell. But it goes to show you the level of security that they were. I mean, really, if I was a terrorist, I could have walked right in and just played it all up, grabbed a coat because they had their lab technician coats hanging there on the wall, and I could have done anything. I mean, seriously, I could have leveled half in Chicago and Central half and just, anybody over there could do anything because they don't pay attention to crap. I mean, they don't watch for nothing. I mean, I was just by there about a month ago, and still the same stuff. The guard, no guard at the shack, nobody doing nothing, just, people coming and going. And there's a railroad track, which is really funny. There's a railroad track that goes right by the reactors because it's not the stacks that you have to worry about in the first place. There's another building. There's another set of buildings that actually contain all the other fun, X-ray material. And the train track right by it, right through all of it. I mean, you can almost walk the track and get in and not even worry about it.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Hey, Ron.
Yes, sir.
You got me a little bit confused here. When you started reading the email, you mentioned Alpena, and now we're talking about something that's another 250, 300 miles south of there in Niles. Is that part of the same email that you were reading?
It absolutely it is, yes. And
okay.
See, I don't know the geography up there. That's why I said I didn't, you know, pull out a map and all of that to find out where all this was going on.
Alpena is in the lower peninsula of Michigan in the northwest side as well.
I just, you know, that's why I said that there's so much stuff out there that you really have to use a lot of discernment, and you really have to try and ferret out what's going on. But I think the more, to me, the bigger story is just the fact that that email, the story in that email, has even a thread of possible credibility to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That the people in this country are in the mindset to believe that their government would do something like that.
Well, yeah, because we don't
exactly
trust them.
Exactly. So, I mean, I'm not saying that as a damnation of the people of society. I'm just saying, you know, here's one story. God knows what happened up in Indiana, Michigan. I don't know. I mean, they're talking about trees being snapped in half and all kinds of crazy stuff. From what I understood, the first story that I read was this is up in the same area where been numerous news reports about a booming sound. You know,
wow.
These people hearing this sound day in, day out they're like, this is crazy. And so, you know, you're right. There's a nuclear power plant up in that area. There's all kinds of different fracking operations and stuff going on up there. And the media is absolutely dead silent on the whole thing.
Of course.
And so, you know, these people are seeing military helicopters and an A-10, and it gets all kinds of out of whack, and you don't know what to believe, what's true and what's
right.
Not true. But the fact that it's probably a completely concocted story, but it still has an air of possibility, you know, I wouldn't rule it out entirely. That doesn't speak well of government and the mindset of society right now.
Right. Well, I'm kind of glad that people are taking notice of these things and hopefully ferreting out the truth. But if people are aware that their government has nefarious plans for us, maybe that's a good thing. We've got to, you know, keep on our toes and not trust them all the time. I mean, that's crazy to trust them. Look where that's gotten us.
Oh, absolutely. I don't trust them at all. In fact, I don't even trust myself. Are you kidding me?
Well, as they used to say, men are not angels, and governments are not made up of angels. So that's why we have, you know, we the people to try to keep these people in check. And hopefully enough people are now, they're fed up with it. They're, you know, people who are halfway educated or laughing at Axelrod, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. If Romney gets in, I think we should all write letters.
Well, you know, there's
just tell him, if you go the way of this zero, I'll haunt you. When I die, I will haunt you, and you'll wish you had not done that. That's what we should tell him. Don't you dare.
I don't see any salvation in a Romney.
Well,
go ahead, Michael.
We can threaten him. Go ahead.
I think you got about 10 minutes left here, Ron, give or take.
Yes, sir.
So I'll just close out with a couple of notes on Camp Grayling, because I'm so familiar with it, okay? First of all, we're talking 147,000 acres.
Oh, my God.
Is
yeah.
How big Camp Grayling is, okay? It spreads over 3 counties, okay? It has a total housing capacity of almost 14,000 people, okay? Now, that may not seem like a lot, but if you want to take 14,000 people like myself or other people that like to run their mouth and tell the truth about what the heck is going on, 14,000 is a lot of people.
Right.
If you want to
I wasn't trying to cut you off, but I don't know where those figures come from as far as the housing or how they're calculated, but 147,000 acres will house a whole lot more than 14,000 people, let me tell you. I mean, when a football stadium will hold 50 or 60,000, you know?
Right.
There's 427 various types of buildings for troop use located on the main installation grounds. And this is supposed to be a National Guard training center for Michigan. But let me clue you, it is much, much more. And if you go there in person, if you ride by there, you can get close enough, bring your binoculars, and you will see that the barbed wire that is surrounding that camp, okay, has been turned the opposite way from what it should be. It should be on the outside to keep people from getting in. But it's been turned around. It's on the inside.
Yep.
Bobs are on the inside, so if you are in the inside trying to get out, you're going to have a hell of a time. Just type in your browser, Camp Grayling, Michigan, and there's tons of information. Thank you all for letting me join in here. Hope I'll be around for another day or two. God bless everyone.
Thanks, Michael. God bless.
Thanks, Mike.
Bill asked if that's 14,000 oven capacity.
Yeah, I was like, I've seen that. Good grief, man.
All right, guys, thank you so much, and God bless this family and everything we're doing. And, Brian, it was great to hear you on the air as well. And I'm going to go listen in the chat room and have fun doing the show rundown. Thank you, Ron. Good
night. God bless, hon. Thanks.
See you, Ron. Take it easy.
See you, Brian. Thanks for calling in, guys. All right, and that's going to wrap us up for the night. We'll do a quick rundown, of course, of the shows coming up tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on Blog Talk Radio for PatriotFamilies.com. We're going to have Mr. Bill Strong and Mr. Hollis Buchanan and Patriot Families chat. Then on Wednesday night, at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, will be Miss Linda Sills, right from the left coast, the young lady that was just on the phone with us. Then on Thursday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, we will have Miss Terry Rowland with Patriot Education. And on Friday at 8, I believe we'll have Brian. If not, someone will probably fill in. Then on Saturday night, we hope to have Mr. Michael Magic on at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then Sunday, I'll be wrapping it up with Fed Up Frank at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So hopefully you'll get to hear someone other than me ramble on for hours on the radio program. But I really want to tell everybody how much I appreciate them tuning in and supporting the show and supporting Patriot Families. And just being a part of the show, being a part of the family, and fighting to restore a government that has only been known to us from the history books. And even then, we haven't gotten the whole story. So, you know, there's a lot of folks out there that would like us to forget that original organic government under our Constitution ever existed and replace it or keep it replaced with the fascist system of government that we all know and love so much here in the land of the free and the home of the brave. And with that, I'm going to lead you out with a song and try to mellow some things out just a little bit. And, you know, none of us are perfect, And we know that. And we just need to present ourselves to God just the way we are and let Him do a work in our life and let Him shape and change us the way He wants us to be. God bless everybody.
Just as I am and waiting not to rid my soul of one dark blood to thee whose blood can cleanse each spot.
I come.